Coming to you live from Arlen, Texas, it's the Hand Plus Podcast, where each week I, Joseph Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in streaming. We talk about what we watched, any news that dropped, trailers that dropped, what you can look forward to. This week, if you saw the title, we're talking about Oscar nominees. Oscar nominations dropped, and a lot of people are interested in the Oscars, want to watch the Oscars, but Oscar night comes around, and they start talking about all these nominees, and people are like, I've never seen any of these movies, and they changed the channel because they realize they don't care, but we're here to tell you, hey, here's where all of the Oscar nominees that are streaming, where they're streaming at, and there's quite a few. I think 54 total movies have been nominated for an Oscar, and I believe 19 of them are currently streaming. So a good chunk of them, a lot of Best Picture nominees. So, you know, we'll help you be able to keep up on the Oscars this year. But Tristan, first off, let's talk about specifically this week in streaming. How was your streaming week this week?
Yeah, I had a really good streaming week. There was a huge episode drop that we're going to talk about that was kind of like a landmark episode. It almost felt like a watershed episode of a TV show. People are all talking about it. It feels like one that people are going to talk about for a couple of years to come. So that'll be a fun episode to cover. And yeah, I watched a good amount of stuff. I actually have something on Peacock to cover that I loved. You know, we never really get to talk about Peacock, so it'll be fun to dive into that. And yeah, we also got plenty of Meta news coverage to talk about as well. So it'll be a stacked episode, a lot to talk about. So yeah, I'm gonna have a good time. And yeah, I'm excited for the Oscar conversation too, because yeah, I always hear that the Oscar comes around and they're like, oh, what's that movie? I don't know what that movie is or that movie is. And I think this is a great year, not just for a solid lineup of nominations, but I think in terms of the big nominees, like the Best Picture nominees, they're all pretty accessible. So it's a good year to have the Oscars. We were able to be able to watch most of the big nominees pretty easily from home. You know, not everything, but we're gonna go through most of the Best Picture nominees are around here somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's kick this show off with HBO Max. You want to start with, talk about that big watershed episode first, kick it off on a high?
Yeah, I want to talk about that episode. If you haven't been watching this, Joe has not yet caught up on The Last of Us, but I'm keeping up episode by episode here. And episode 3, I thought it was going to be a bottle episode last week. It was kind of that, but not fully a bottle episode. But it did focus mostly on Nick Offerman and Maury Bartlett characters, who were these two men who were living in the post-apocalypse. Nick Offerman, of course, known for Parks and Rec and his comedy days, but he's popped up in some pretty fun drama performances here and there for kind of like smaller roles, similar to this one, where he plays a man living on the outskirts, and he runs into Maury Bartlett's character, and they kind of have a love story in the post-apocalypse. You know, it's like not obviously the ideal place to fall in love with someone, to find the love of your life, but you follow these men who are like survivalists out in this impossible situation, falling in love and dealing with kind of the tragedies and the highs and lows of, you know, falling in love in a time when you're in the apocalypse and the things that they have to deal with that. And yeah, I think it's a great episode. I think Nick Offerman is going to be up there for Emmy nominations for guest appearance on a drama, whatever they are going to categorize him as. And in terms of adaptation, I think it's a great move too, because they made a good amount of changes here. Like, these are extreme level minor characters in the game. For example, Maury Bartlett's character, he's not even like seen in the game. He's mentioned in like a diary entry, and you can find a body that's kind of like implied to be his body. He's not even like a present character. So they are able to give him a lot more to it. And Nick Offerman's character is developed a lot more here, even if he's present longer in the games than he is in the drama here. But they give him a lot more depth. So yeah, this is very exciting. And I mentioned in the last couple episodes that I'm enjoying the show so far, but it's such a direct adaptation that I'm a little bit unsure where it's going to go. Is it just going to feel like exactly The Last of Us, or is it going to have some changes? And this episode reassured me that they're going to change some stuff up while still feeling like faithful to the game. And yeah, this is easily the best episode so far, and I can see this going down as like an all-time episode for TV for a lot of people.
All right, so I know we've been talking a little bit about The Last of Us, but I don't know if we've ever fully explained to anyone who doesn't know, like, what is the story of The Last of Us?
So The Last of Us, the first few minutes of the show take place on the day of a breakout. Like, it's not a zombie-like plague, but it's more of like a fungus base. You know, it's like these tendrils that are coming along and kind of like possessing people's bodies and wanting to continue to spread the fungus and like take over essentially the Earth. And now we skip forward like 20 years, and now Pedro Pascal plays the character Joel, who's kind of living on the run in this post-apocalyptic world, not really having any connections, but then he's given this lifetime level job. You got to take this girl from Boston all the way across to Washington, and she's going to be the one that kind of changes everything and saves the world, because there's something involving Ellie that is a potential for a cure to all of the outbreaks. So he decides to, against his own better judgment, take on this job and bring this girl across the country. And you follow kind of like the father-daughter style ups and lows, the bonding of these two characters, and they're not really seeing eye to eye, but they're kind of, you know, seeing the similarities and the differences as they go along the path. And I think this was kind of an episode where you're seeing like they're stopping along on their journey, you know, oh, but they gotta get a car, so let's have an episode where they get a car, you know. And you could have just had them show up and get a car, but they were able to kind of like make a whole entire complex story out of these characters that would have just been like a couple of scene characters, but they were able to, you know, turn that into a whole episode here.
All right, cool. Yeah, it's a show I definitely need to watch. I haven't been watching. Every time I think to go to watch it, something pops up. But I'm definitely going to carve out the time to try and watch it. Hopefully I'll catch up by the season finale, and me and Tristan can talk about the season finale together. But everyone I see online is praising the show, loves the show. Like what you're saying with the adaptation of, it's faithful, but it changes things. Sounds very much like House of the Dragon, how it was faithful to the books, but it was like, oh, there was this one line here in the book. We're going to turn that into a whole episode and a half, so...
Yeah, I'm really curious. I think, especially because you're holding off on watching it right now, it might even be interesting if you hold off a little bit longer and you're able to kind of binge the entirety of it in one go and see how the story works that way. Because, you know, video games are such a long process that you don't necessarily sit down and play a video game in one go, you know? So I think it'd be interesting to see how the story adapts to a one-sit binge, you know?
Yeah. So, you ready to move on to some other HBO Max topics?
I'm ready. If you guys are watching Last of Us, I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments, because I got no one to talk to with it, at least on this show, you know. So give me some Last of Us love.
Yeah, if you want to talk about The Last of Us, I can look at the Twitch chat so I can see anyone commenting, or you can comment on YouTube or tweet at us at The Hand Plus, and we will reply to you. I check that Twitter usually once a day. I'm usually posting on there, commenting on there. Last of Us did get renewed for season 2. It may or may not be the final season. We don't really know. There's only a second game has come out, right?
Yeah, the second game has come out, and I'm curious how long it'll be until the second season comes out, because there is a big time jump between game 1 and game 2. Yeah. So if they want to age the actress up, they're going to have to take at least a couple of years off.
Yeah. All right, and then also in some DC news on HBO Max, James Gunn today gave a big slate announcement talking about the future of DC. James Gunn, if you don't know, directed Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 and 2. He's directing Volume 3. He also directed The Suicide Squad, and now he's the co-CEO of, I believe it's DC Studios, DC Films, and he's kind of the big person in charge over in DC right now. Announced we're getting a Superman movie, we're getting, I believe, a Swamp Thing movie, but we're also getting a number of TV shows going either to HBO or HBO Max. We're getting Paradise Lost, which is essentially going to be a prequel series set on Paradise Island in a time on the island where Wonder Woman grew up, but in the time before Wonder Woman. We're also getting a Green Lantern show featuring Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart as kind of these, as James Gunn described it, a true detective style story. So I'm very curious on that. We're also getting an Amanda Waller show starring Viola Davis. Amanda Waller obviously in Suicide Squad and The Suicide Squad. And we're getting a couple of animated shows as well, but before we move on to those, Tristan, what are your thoughts on some of these live-action shows between Paradise Lost? What are you, any you're looking forward to? Any you're like just wish they would cancel before they even released?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what an Amanda Waller show is going to look like. You know, she's been a fine character when she showed up in other shows and other movies, but I don't know what a whole show of that character looks like. She's kind of a one-note character, you know, so I don't know how she works as a lead, but that's the only one I'm super cautious about. To be honest, I'm really excited for the Themyscira Paradise Lost show, because when they pitch that as like a Game of Thrones in DC kind of pitch, I think that sounds awesome. You know, like imagine you have the budget of like a House of the Dragon or even like a Rings of Power, and you give it to like the Amazonian War for Independence or something like that. You do some kind of crazy Amazonian lore and you build out all this Amazonian stuff, and then people wondered like why this lineup have Batman and Superman, where's Wonder Woman? And I think that this show is going to give us Wonder Woman, of course, but it's going to take them a bit of a time. I think you give us like 2, 3, 4 seasons of this, and then you're kind of slowly building up Diana, and then you can launch Wonder Woman off of the show, and all of a sudden you have this super powerful Wonder Woman that you built up all of this mythical hierarchy for. I think that's going to be awesome. I'm really excited for that show.
Yeah, I definitely feel like where Marvel was more of the, we're going to show how this universe started, I think with this DC universe, we're going to jump right in the middle of it. Like, we're basically told the first Batman movie in this DC universe is going to be Batman and his son Damian Wayne, which is like the fourth or fifth Robin. And so I got to imagine the previous people were Robin, so I think we're kind of just jumping into the middle of this universe.
Yeah, I think the inspiration here is when you jump into something like DC Rebirth or the New 52, when you're starting with issue one of a New 52, it's like you're kind of playing catch up as you're reading it. You know, they're jumping you into like the middle of Batman's story, where you're kind of having to figure out who these characters are as you're reading the first couple issues. And I think they're going to go for that kind of a feel. You're jumping into the story as it's kind of already started, you know, a universe that's already kind of built. We don't got to get another origin of Batman. I know his parents die. You know, I've heard that one before.
Yeah. Batman's the one where, like, I'm kind of glad with this, the Robert Pattinson, we kind of just jumped in the middle. It's like, I think as Matt Reeves described it, it's like day one of year two, essentially. And we kind of skipped, and I don't need to see his origin. Another show we got is a Booster Gold TV series, which I've always been a big Booster Gold fan. If you don't know who Booster Gold is, essentially, he's a failed football star from the future who ends up working as a janitor at a superhero museum full of all these gadgets and all these things heroes have used to fight crime in the last few centuries. And he also discovers a time machine, and he seeks glory, and he wants glory. And so he decides to take a bunch of these gadgets, hop in the time machine, and hop to our timeline and kind of be a superhero for not exactly the right reasons, more for the fame and glory and less to actually help people. You know, there's been talk of certain people that James Gunn has worked with in Guardians of the Galaxy hopping over to the DC world. And I think both Chris Pratt, and I'm blanking on his name, but the voice of Rocket Raccoon would both make excellent Booster
Bradley
Golds.
Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, yeah. I think Bradley Cooper and Chris Pratt would both make excellent Booster Golds in TV. Whether they have interest in doing a TV show about a D-list character, I don't know. But I think both of them would be very good at it.
I think Bradley Cooper is a really great pick, especially because he has a good career right now, you know. But I think he would have a great time like jumping out to the TV world for a second. Yeah. Here's my deal. If Chris Pratt comes back, he's got to regress. He's got to go back to the Parks and Rec kind of slubby, chubby Chris Pratt. I think that would be a really fun take for Booster Gold to be this Chris Pratt who was once the big fit Chris Pratt who was kind of like going out for the super action stars, and now he's kind of back to the slub look. I think that would be really funny. I know Chris Pratt would definitely not be down to go back to the slub look probably. Wouldn't that necessarily help his contracts, I think, but it would be funny. And I think it would be fun for the character.
Yeah, I'm definitely down with that. And we have a comment from my friend and former roommate who said, I did have a car that I had named Booster Gold that I totaled a little over a year ago. So, RIP that car. And we're also getting a show about a group of characters I've never heard of called the Creature Commandos. It's going to be an animated show, and essentially what they're looking for is voice actors who look like they could play the live-action counterparts to transition from animation to live-action and back and forth. I think that's one of the things they're going to try to focus on is have people, like if they have an animated project and like Batman appears in their animated project, whoever they cast as their live-action Batman is going to be the voice of Batman in that animated project. And a lot of random characters, like Bride of Frankenstein, Weasel, who was in the Suicide Squad, was in this lineup. Rick Flagg Sr. is in this lineup of characters. People will know Rick Flagg from the Suicide Squad. So it seems like kind of like a this Suicide Squad, but like a horror shift on the Suicide Squad. So that's could be an interesting show.
Yeah, I'm curious about that one because I had never heard of them before either. So I looked them up, and yeah, there's some crazy characters who've come and gone in their lineup. You have like werewolves and vampires and like robots and stuff like that. So I'm really curious how weird James Gunn's going to get, because in his Marvel world, he's shown that he likes to go for the weird and the zany. So I'm wondering, like, if this is his entire universe, like he's building this with his touch, like how weird and zany they're going to go. And this is one of those shows where I feel like they could really go wild, especially because it's animated. He doesn't have to worry about budget necessarily, the rules, the visual rules of the world, you know. He can do what he wants. So I'm curious to see like how much this is, because he wrote every episode according to the stream, so it should be a good one.
All right, and that kind of covers, and all of those shows are going to be on HBO or HBO Max. They're going to be streaming on HBO Max at some point, so that's why we covered them there.
And do you think that the Penguin show is still happening? Because there was no mention of that anywhere today.
I think, one of the things I want to talk, I fully believe that they're going to let all of these quote-unquote what they're calling Elseworld stuff ride out until they're no longer successful. And then I don't think they're by like I don't think they'll be starting new Elseworlds project. I wouldn't be surprised because I think they're filming The Penguin now because I saw something that they're filming it currently in New York and Robert Pattinson was spotted in New York a couple days ago. So there's rumors that Robert Pattinson will appear. I think they'll make this Penguin show and maybe they'll make a couple seasons of it depending on how successful it is, but I don't expect any more Robert Pattinson, Matt Reeves, Batman shows. I think they're going to make this one because they're currently making it. But and they'll make Joker too, but I don't expect to see like a Lex Luthor origin story completely disconnected from this.
Yeah, I'm curious. I think in the end, it'll follow the money, right? If people are all watching the Batman and all watching the Penguin and nobody's watching, you know, Creatures of the Black Knight or whatever this one is, you know, I wonder if they're going to go with the other direction.
Yeah. That's part of the problem with having Elseworlds and multiverses and all this thing happening at the same time, because if people really love the Robert Pattinson Batman and don't like this Brave and the Bold Batman, and then it's time for the Justice League movie, it's going to probably be pretty hard for Warner Brothers not to say, we would like Robert Pattinson to be the Batman in our Justice League movie.
Yeah, I'm really, really curious how it plays out. They called it the Matt Reeves trilogy, so I wonder if they're applying he's going to do another one after this, and then we're going to not talk about it again, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what I imagine. Like Aquaman and Shazam, I think they're going to release them, and then that's going to be it. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if we have a different Aquaman by the time we have a Justice League movie that isn't Jason Momoa, but I don't think they want to announce, oh yeah, Jason Momoa isn't going to be our Aquaman anymore before they even start marketing Aquaman 2.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious. It's a really exciting time for DC. Yeah. I thought they'd give us a clear idea of what they were doing, and I got some idea, but honestly, it's a little bit more confusing in some ways.
Yeah. All right, you ready to talk some Oscar nominees, or at least let
me
talk?
I'm ready. Let's go to some successful stuff.
All right, so HBO Max, we have The Banshees of Inisherin, and all these plot descriptions I got off IMDb, because some of them I haven't watched, so I wasn't able to write them myself, but The Banshees of Inisherin stars Colin Farrell, and it's about two lifelong friends who find themselves at an impasse when one abruptly ends their relationship with alarming consequences for both of them. It's been nominated for 9 awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Lead Actor. 2 people were nominated for Best Supporting Actor, got nominated for Best Supporting Actors, Best Original Screenplay, Best Film Editing, and Best Original Score, and that's currently streaming on HBO Max. And I'm going to have all of these movies. If you're watching live, there's really no way. I didn't want to make all these graphics to put it on the screen. So if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're watching or listening or watching the podcast version, I will have all of this information in the description. So if you're like, oh, that movie sounded interesting, crap, I forgot where it has to go. You don't have to go all the way through and find it. It'll just be in the description. But yeah, so Banshees of Inisherin, Tristan, I believe you watched it. Any very quick thoughts on it? Should people watch it? Is this one people should check out on HBO Max?
You should definitely watch it. I think it's great this has been as accessible. And I think there's definitely a clear front runner for the wins for a lot of the categories, but I think this could be number 2 for a lot of them. I think this could easily come in night of and upset. But yeah, this is a great one. A nice mix of comedy and darkness and kind of melancholy. So yeah, if you like the kind of Irish kind of landscaping to it, it's gorgeous, these shots of Ireland and the beautiful nature of it. So yeah, a fun premise, great performances and gorgeous to look at too.
All right, and we also have The Batman, and the plot of that is, I mean, it's a Batman movie, you kind of know, but when a sadistic serial killer begins murdering key political figures in Gotham, Batman is forced to investigate the city's hidden corruption and question his family's involvement. It's your typical Batman movie, a little bit darker of an edge than even the Nolan trilogy, but it was nominated for 3 awards: Best Visual Effects, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, and Best Sound. So if this is more just, hey, I've watched all of the best pictures, I'm just looking for something else to watch. But I assume if you're a big film fan, if you're listening to this podcast, watching this podcast, outside of just supporting Tristan and I, you've seen The Batman.
Probably.
But next up, we have Elvis, and it's, you know, about the life of American music icon Elvis Presley from his childhood to becoming a rock and movie star in the 1950s. While maintaining a complex relationship with his manager, Colonel Tom Parker, who was played not very well by Tom Hanks. It's been nominated for 8 awards: Best Picture, Best Lead Actor, Best Cinematography, Best Film Editing, Best Production Design, Best Costume Design, Best makeup and hairstyling, best sound. It's directed by Baz Luhrmann. I think if you're a fan of Baz Luhrmann's work, you're going to like this movie. He very much has a distinct style. Tristan, you enjoy, I believe, the work of Baz Luhrmann. What are some movies? If you've watched some of Baz Luhrmann's work, you may watch like this. So what movies is he?
He's done like Moulin Rouge. He did Great Gatsby. Those are his biggest releases. Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio in his early days. So you know that kind of loud visual flair that he has. And I think this is the loudest and the flariest that I've seen from Baz Luhrmann. He's really going for it. He loves that style, and all the editing is just so bombastic and crazy. So if you're in for like a wild, crazy ride, that like, yeah, Tom Hanks's performance is weird, but it's almost like he's performing like this weird embodiment of like all evil, and it's like a very weird movie, but a fun ride. And if you're a fan of Elvis, you're gonna have a lot of fun with this. But I honestly, I'm not a fan of Elvis. Like I'm not a hater of Elvis, but I'm not a person who knows anything about Elvis, and I still had a great time watching this. So yeah, you're in for a fun one, a visual treat for sure.
Yeah. And then we also have Navalny. I don't know. I haven't watched this movie, but it follows the man who survived an assassination attempt by poisoning with a lethal nerve agent in August 2020. During his months-long recovery, he makes shocking discoveries about the attempt on his life and decides to return home. And that was just nominated for Best Documentary Film. So that's a documentary. I've read about this guy. I haven't watched the movie, but the story sounds super interesting, and I'd definitely be intrigued to watch this documentary.
I've heard great things about it, too, so yeah, definitely recommending it.
Yeah, and these are all on HBO Max. The Banshees of Inisherin, The Batman, Elvis, and Navalny. All right, you want to move over to Amazon Prime? I have a feeling this is going to be a long episode.
Yeah, I think we're going to be taking a while here.
All right, and let's kick it over with Amazon Prime, and I believe you and I both watched a movie. I don't know your thoughts on it. I know my thoughts on it. And that movie is Shotgun Wedding, starring Josh Duhamel and Jennifer Lopez. My girlfriend and I think it was Saturday night. Yeah, Saturday night, my fiance and I decided, I think she's the one that put it on. And I kind of wanted to watch it mainly for the podcast. I didn't really have high expectations going in. That movie, in my opinion, was a lot better than I anticipated it would be. It's a fun action adventure movie. It's Die Hard at a wedding, but none of them are really like cops. Essentially, Josh Duhamel and Jennifer Lopez are on a vacation wedding or a destination wedding when pirates attack their wedding and they have to survive. You got some great actors in there. Cheech Marin plays Jennifer Lopez's dad. Jennifer Coolidge plays Josh Duhamel's mom. Lenny Kravitz makes an appearance. Tristan, I have yet to talk to you about this movie. I only know that you watched it. What are your thoughts on Shotgun Wedding?
Yeah, Joe, I had this in my list for the most anticipated releases of the year in our first episode this year.
I don't believe you.
I lived up to my expectations. I thought this was a great watch. It was so much fun. Yeah, you mentioned that it's Die Hard, but it's not just Die Hard because it's fun action in a weird setting. It's Die Hard because you're seeing an actor out of their element, right? Like Die Hard was, you're taking the guy from Moonlighting and you're putting him in an action movie. Isn't that crazy? And this is like taking people from, you know, rom-coms and you're putting them in an action movie. Isn't that crazy? And I think it's really funny. It's Jennifer Coolidge and people like that own these roles and kind of like ham it up. I had a really great time with this. And yeah, it's a fun one to watch with your loved ones and your family. It's a great, like, you're going to laugh out loud. You're going to have a great time sitting together and enjoying yourself. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's a lot more violent than I anticipated. Like, I remember when it started and I saw the R rating and I was like, all right, there's probably going to be some, like, crude humor and stuff. But no, it definitely earns that R rating with its violence.
Yeah, I thought it was, I love that too, because I love that it goes all the way for the violence. It has that great clash of the rom-com setup and then the violence hitting so hard in it too. I love that. I thought it was a great time, and I hope we see more stuff like this. It's just kind of like odd, weird premises that can get launched on streaming. Not everything has to be like an IP of an IP of a spinoff, you know?
Yeah, this was a fun movie. I don't know if there needs a sequel. My only real problem with it is I felt like Josh Duhamel and Jennifer Lopez were like slightly miscast in just their ages because they're both in their early 50s. I felt like this movie probably would have been better if they were in their 30s or 40s. I understand he's older too, but I saw at the end as the credits were rolling through that it was produced by Ryan Reynolds, and I immediately was like, oh yeah, this was definitely at some point Ryan Reynolds was supposed to be the Josh Duhamel character, and I can 100% see that, and I feel like it would have been a better fit. But I still really enjoyed the movie, and I liked it for I liked it a lot. And if you like rom-coms, if you like action movies, definitely check this out. And I feel like it almost leads more into action than rom-com.
Yeah, rom-com I feel like is in the setup, you know, kind of like the very beginning of it, and then it definitely gets into the action quickly. Yeah.
All right, we also have some Amazon news. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who people may recognize from the show Fleabag. She was also the voice of L337 in Solo. And she's going to be in Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny coming out in June of this year. She is writing a Tomb Raider series for Amazon Prime with a movie and video game all interconnected. And my question for you, Tristan, is do you have a cast in mind? Do you think Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to take on the role of Lara Croft?
I think they want to go with someone. I mean, I love Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but I think you want to go with someone just slightly younger. I can't remember the actress's name now, but I think the young woman who played Alex in Hightower would be an interesting pick. I think she could have a nice kind of resurgence in a career. I think I wouldn't be opposed to like Phoebe Waller-Bridge taking on the role, but I almost feel like this is more something you give to an up-and-comer, someone that has not really had a huge performance before. But I don't know. You have any theories on who you would cast?
I have no idea. I feel like maybe I know like Sydney Sweeney has gotten like prominence for Euphoria, and there's been talks of her like joining Spider-Man, and I feel like she could be on that trajectory to lead her own series or lead her own movie. And especially if you want to do like a series which goes into a movie, I think someone like on that level of star power would work.
Yeah, it's hard when you start thinking of a lot of the young people. You start thinking, oh, they're already at Marvel. Oh, they're already at this franchise. They're already at this franchise. Are they going to go and do Tomb Raider also? You know what? I think it'll be great. And I think, yeah, it's a good pick for Amazon. I'm really curious how they're going to manage having the movie and the video game interconnected. Like, how interconnected are they going to be? Are you just saying it's like the same Lara Croft, or is there going to be like plot connective tissue there too? You know?
Yeah, definitely.
But I think it's good. Video game takeover, you know, we're finally seeing it happen. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I think, is a great fit. She has a good sense of humor. I wonder if they're going to have that same... Is Lara Croft going to be, like, talking to the audience, you know? Is it going to be kind of, we're in on the mystery with her? We're kind of, like, trying to solve the puzzle with her?
Yeah.
Or how are we going to do it? You know, that'll be fun to see.
Yeah, it definitely could be a fun take on it. We also have some other news. The Boys on Amazon Prime beat both Star Wars and Marvel in 2022 overall viewership. Rings of Power at number 15. So kind of this whole Amazon Prime strategy of we're not going to release a lot, but what we do release is going to be big. It's going strong. I mean, Amazon obviously has other avenues to make money that some of these other services don't have. But I mean, we talk crap about them, but they seem to be doing well, at least for what they do release.
Yeah, I think the fact that a lot of people have Amazon Prime for other reasons is good for them. So when they do have something that hits, people are willing to check it out and say, oh, you know what? I do play for Prime. I'll check that out. So yeah, something like Tomb Raider, I think, is a good addition to this, because once they start hitting, I think they're going to have some nice hits. And I mean, I don't want to root for Amazon, but I want to root for myself. You know, I want to get good shows out of it. So let's hope that it inspires them to pursue some good stuff.
Yeah. And we also have somewhat news, Babylon, which I don't believe got any Oscar nominations. People were talking about it, but it was kind of on that cusp. A lot of people liked it, a lot of people didn't. Directed by Damien Chazelle, kind of about old Hollywood, is going to be available for purchase today on Amazon Prime. You can actually purchase Babylon and watch that now. And then we also have Skinamarink. I don't know anything about that. Hit Shudder on Thursday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Yeah. What is Skinamarink?
Skinamarink's been kind of this viral horror hit that was made for like $15,000, some extreme level minor budget, and Shudder decided to do a theater release of it just to see, to kind of test the waters and see how it went. It ended up making a ton of money and having a huge word of mouth, and it's made like millions of dollars back off its budget, and it's become this huge surprise hit. And yeah, if you've been seeing the posts around about it, you're wondering what Skinamarink is about. It's about these two young kids who wake up in the middle of the night and find out that their parents are gone out of the house. Not only that, but all the doors and the windows are vanished. So they're stuck in the house. They can't get out. They can't even see what's going on in the outside world. And they're just waiting for the parents to come back. And it's shot very oddly. It feels like it's shot with like a handheld security camera or something. You get a lot of like weird shots of the wall where you're kind of like barely seeing movement in the corner of the frame. It has this odd, like nightmarish quality to it. The best way I can describe it is it feels like you're having a fever dream at like 8 years old, you know, when you wake up and you're like, where are my parents? What's going on? And the TV is the only light you have, you know, so they call it Skinamarink because the Skinamarink song keeps kind of like repeating on the TV all the time. So yeah, it's very strange, very bizarre and surreal, but it's this crazy horror success story of an extreme level micro budget movie that's made like a lot of money back. So if you're curious about it, check it out on Shudder.
All right, cool. And for Amazon Prime, for the Oscars, there's only one movie. It's not very extensive for the Oscars, but Argentina 1985, which is about a team of lawyers who takes on the head of Argentina's bloody military dictatorship during the 1980s in a battle against odds and a race against time. And that's nominated for Best International Feature Film. So if you're someone who likes to keep up on all the Oscar movies, and maybe that's one you missed in theaters, obviously it's a foreign film, so it probably wasn't playing in many. It's on Amazon Prime right now, so you can watch it there. Or if you're like, you know what, I feel like watching a foreign film, it's nominated for Best International Foreign Film, so it's got to be at least somewhat decent. Tristan, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you haven't watched this.
I have not watched it, but I am going to try and watch it before the Oscars. So I do try and get as much of the nominations watched as I can watch, you know, so it'll be on the list.
All right, and yeah, that's on Amazon Prime, like you said. And now let's hop over to Netflix. I don't know if you watched anything on Netflix. I watched the movie You People. I had high hopes for it. And if you don't know what it is, it's kind of co-written by Jonah Hill, and I'm blanking on his name, but he's the creator of Black-ish and Grown-ish and Young-ish, and he directed it as well. And essentially, Jonah Hill and Lauren London, you see their relationship, they grow, they become a couple, and they decide to introduce each other to each other's parents. And Jonah Hill's parents are played by Julie Louis-Dreyfus and David Duchovny, and Lauren London's parents are played by Eddie Murphy and Nia Long. And kind of her parents don't like him because they pictured their daughter with someone black, and they don't like him. He's a regular Jewish guy. And Jonah Hill's parents are very much like, don't see Lauren London as a human person. They just see her as a black person. And so like the way they treat each other and the problems, you know, it just causes problems in their relationship. And I don't want to give too much away. I happily guessed the exact ending, how the ending would play out, like about with an hour left. I'm like, I was sitting next to my fiance and I'm like, this is how it's going to play out. This is how it's going to go. I can just picture it in my mind, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone that sees it. But I feel like as I was watching it, it was entertaining. I was entertained by it, but it was kind of like after the movie was over and I sat back and thought about it, I felt like it was trying to have both sides of everything. Of like, I felt like it was dark and dealing with very real topics, but then I don't think it resolved them in a way that was great. And also in a movie that has Jonah Hill, Eddie Murphy, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I thought it'd be a lot funnier. Like, there were moments I chuckled and everything, but it almost felt like a bunch of comedians tried to make a serious movie, and I don't know how well they pulled it off.
Yeah, I've been seeing this get trashed a lot over the last couple of days. It's honestly getting kind of like piled on a lot online, so I was thinking you're going to come on here and destroy it, but it sounds like you had an okay time with it, but it definitely didn't reach the potential that it could have.
No, it's fine. It felt like they couldn't decide if they wanted to be like a serious movie that dealt with serious topics or like just a fun rom-com.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah. I was curious about watching it, and then the reviews were just kind of bad to middling. So it was one that I definitely was thinking of watching this week and didn't come around to it, but... Yeah, do you think it's one that would be worth watching?
I want you to watch it just because I want your take on it. And there were certain things in the movie that it just didn't make sense to me. Like, they were talking about how, oh, I don't know if, like, a black person and a white person could be in a relationship together. And, like, as I'm watching the movie sitting next to my black fiancé, I was just like, I mean, they can.
Working.
Just like, it's working pretty well for us. It's worked well for a lot of other people. It'd be one thing if this movie was set in, like, the 1970s or something. And it'd be like, okay, I can kind of understand it, but it's worked for a lot of people, so I don't really understand the point that you're making of like, oh, it's so hard for us to be in a relationship together. I'm like, I mean, your parents, both your sets of your parents just suck. That's all it is.
Yeah, I'll check it out probably. I want to start getting my 2023 watches going, so I'll add it to the list for sure.
All right. And we also have a Pamela Anderson documentary coming out soon on Netflix. I saw the trailer for that, and it actually looked rather interesting. It's kind of more just about her life in general and her experience being like this top sex symbol of the 90s.
Yeah, I think it'll be curious. I'm curious to look into it, too. Like, how much of this is a puff piece to, like, promote her new book and her brand, and how much of it is going to be, like, an actual look into her life, you know? I think it'll be cool to humanize someone that's been so kind of built up. You know, I think about the Britney Spears documentaries that came out, like, a year or so ago, and how much that kind of changed the entire conversation around Britney Spears and around pop icons and women in media and stuff like that. You know, the way we talk about women and pop culture, and it's changed so much since the 90s, so I'm sure that this documentary is going to have a lot of cringe. You know, you look back and you'll see something someone said to her on TV or something like that, and you're like, oh, God, yeah. I can't believe you're doing that back in the 90s, you know? Yeah. So I'm curious to watch this one for sure.
Yeah. All right. We have quite a bit of Oscar nominees on Netflix. We have All Quiet on the Western Front, standard story. It's a famous book, been remade a bunch of times. But if you don't know, it's about a young German soldier's terrifying experience and distress on the Western Front during World War One. It's nominated for 9 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best International Feature Film, Best Production Design, Best Visual Effects, Best Makeup and Hair Styling, Best Original Score, and Best Sound.
Wow.
Have you seen it?
I have. It's a gorgeously shot war movie. You know what you're getting out of it, I guess. You know, it's a pretty straightforward war movie, but it's incredibly well made. So if you're a war movie fan, you got to be watching this.
All right, and we also have Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths, about an acclaimed journalist turned documentarian who goes on an onerous introspective journey to reconcile with the past, the present, and his Mexican identity, nominated just for 1 award, Best Cinematography. So if you really like good visual shots, maybe check out Bardo, the False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths.
Yeah, I want to say that's from the same director as Birdman Alejandro González Iñárritu. He's done a lot of really great stuff, so if you're a fan of his work, check it out. It's not nearly to the level of like acclaim and popularity as like Birdman and The Revenant, but it's if you're a fan of him, you're probably going to like it. It has his visual style for sure.
All right, and we also have a movie we talked about a little bit on here, Blonde, basically a somewhat fictionalized version of the life of Marilyn Monroe, and that's nominated for just 1 award, Best Lead Actress, for Ana de Armas, who, you know, people know from things like Knives Out and the most recent James Bond movie. We also have The Elephant Whispers, nominated for Best Documentary Short, and that's about Boman and Belly, a couple in South India who devote their lives to caring for an orphaned baby elephant named Raghu, forging a family like no other that tests the barrier between the human and animal world. That sounds exactly like the type of thing that would be nominated for Best Documentary Short. We also have a movie we've talked about on here a lot, Glass Onion, which is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. I think everyone knows what that is. I'm not even going to bother reading the description. We also have nominated for Best Animated Film, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. And it's in this dark, basically it's a darker reimagining of Pinocchio in the style of stop motion animation.
It looks great.
Yep. We also have The Martha Mitchell Effect, and that's nominated for Best Documentary Short, and it's the cabinet wife who spoke out during Watergate and the Nixon administration's campaign to gaslight her into silence. So if you're a U.S. history fan, definitely check out The Martha Mitchell Effect. It's nominated for Best Documentary Short, so, and it looks like it delves into one person's side of the Watergate scandal.
Interesting.
And then finally, we have The Sea Beast, nominated for Best Animated Film. When a young girl stows away on the ship of a legendary sea monster hunter, they launch an epic journey into uncharted waters and make history to boot. Did you watch The Sea Beast?
I haven't seen this one. I was surprised it got in because it was kind of on the list, but there's a lot of other animated movies I was expecting to get in there above this one, so I'm going to check it out for sure.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely check it out. And if you check it out, if you've watched any of these movies that we haven't, message us and say, hey, I know it's nominated for an Oscar, and that's a pretty big recommendation into itself, but you need to watch this because it's great. Or say, hey, how did this get nominated for an Oscar? This movie sucked. Either way, tweet at us. Let us know. Tweet at us at The Hand Plus, or message us in the comments, or live in the chat if you're watching live. Ready to move over to Disney Plus?
I'm ready. What do we got, Joe?
All right. I believe the only thing we really watched was... that I watched was The Bad Batch. I don't know if you watched the most recent episode.
I have not. How was it, Joe?
Oh, it's a pretty solid. It's similar to last week in the fact of I don't know how much it's going to connect to the larger story. Weirdly enough, I feel like there's a chance it connects more to the Jedi Fallen Order video games right now, or Jedi Survivor video games. I don't want to spoil too much, but there is something in towards the final shots of the episode that I feel like connects to those video games. And essentially, this was very much someone at Lucasfilm was watching Indiana Jones when they were writing this episode of The Bad Batch, because this very much heavy Indiana Jones inspiration in this episode. It was basically The Bad Batch going on an Indiana Jones type mission, looking for artifacts. Going treasure hunting, exploring in a cave, looking for artifacts.
I'll definitely check it out. But yeah, this Bad Batch season for me, it's one that I watch, but I'm not sitting there like night one, day one, trying to hit play on the remote. Yeah. I get to them eventually, but so far there's not been an episode where I felt like I was dying for not getting to it, you know?
Yeah.
So let me know if something comes around and you're like, Tristan, you got to watch this before the episode. I definitely will, you know, but yeah. I'm liking the season so far.
Yeah. We also have, you know, rumors, hints of is Daisy Ridley returning to Star Wars? One of the guys working for THR posted a GIF of Daisy Ridley, I believe, from either episode 8 or episode 9, reaching out under the Falcon into the rain. And so a lot of question marks around Daisy Ridley right now. I fully believe that she is going to be in the 2025 Damon Lindelof movie that's supposed to be set recently after episode 9, but we shall see.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think those sequels were something that they seemed like they were afraid to touch for a little bit, so it'll be cool to see Daisy Ridley come back. And Star Wars Celebration, believe it or not, is only a few months away, so I'm sure we'll figure out what this is actually going to be that day.
Yeah. Yeah, I assume they'll give us some bigger announcements at Star Wars Celebration. And as far as Oscar nominees, we have Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, currently not streaming, but will be on Disney Plus February 1st, so tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, or today, depending on when you're watching this. But yeah, February 1st. And if you don't know what it's about, the people of Wakanda fight to protect their home from intervening world powers as they mourn the death of King T'Challa. It's been nominated for 5 awards: Best Supporting Actress, Best Visual Effects, Best Costume Design, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, and Best Original Song. I think it'll win Best Supporting Actress from everything I've seen and what people are talking about, but we shall see. It's also got Fire of Love, which is nominated for Best Documentary, and it's about intrepid scientists and lovers Keisha and Maurice Kraft, who died in a volcanic explosion, doing the very thing that brought them together, unraveling the mysteries of volcanoes by capturing the most explosive imagery ever recorded. So, if you like volcanoes and earth science stuff, I feel like that documentary Fire of Love will be right up your alley.
I thought it was great. Really great to look at, too. Really cool footage.
Yeah. We also have Les Pupilles. I don't know how to say that. It's French. I'm not French. And it's nominated for Best Live Action Short, and it follows the rebellious girls of a Catholic boarding school before Christmas in a time of war and scarcity. And then finally, a movie we talked about on this podcast earlier in the year, Turning Red, nominated for Best Animated Film. It's a Pixar movie, and it's about a 13-year-old girl named Maylin who turns into a giant red panda whenever she gets too excited.
Yeah, it feels like the movie came out forever ago.
Yeah,
you know, when I talked about it,
yeah.
I was like, no, that can't be possible. But you're right, it's been less than a year.
Yeah, all right. Any thoughts on any of these movies? Black Panther, Fire of Love, Les Pupilles?
I really liked Fire of Love. I would love to see that sneak in and get the documentary win. That's one that I was really impressed by. Just the scale of it, the interesting visuals of it, yeah. So that'll be a good one to win. Black Panther, I'm not sure how Marvel movies keep getting visual effects nominations, but... we'll see. Some kind of conspiracy going on there. They should be investigating that, you know, sort of actresses who happen to get nominated because they don't have huge, massive campaigns, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you there. And you know what? Let's just finish out these nominations, and then we'll end on Peacock, and we'll let you... we'll talk about some of the stuff we watched on other streaming services. We have on Apple TV, The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse... That's nominated for Best Animated Short. Follows, guess what? It follows a boy, a mole, a fox, and a horse as they create an unexpected friendship and travel together in the boy's search for home. Haven't watched it. Probably won't watch it. If you have watched it and you're like, hey, this is an amazing piece of cinema, you need to watch it, tweet at me, and I probably still won't, but I'll try. Tristan, have you watched it?
I have not.
All right. And we also have Causeway, and that is about a U.S. soldier suffers a traumatic brain injury while fighting in Afghanistan and struggles to adjust to life back home, I believe. Now it's nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and I believe that was Brian Tyree Henry, who people may know from Atlanta as Paperboy. And
so this cool. one I'm looking forward to, because I'm really curious to see his performance. You know, he's had such a huge, huge career, but a lot of it has been like Bullet Train and Godzilla versus Kong and nothing that's really like letting him give a performance, you know, so I'm excited to see him be good in here.
Yeah. And then also on Paramount Plus, I dropped some Paramount Plus news as well. It looks like Paramount Plus and Showtime are going to merge and become one streaming service and launch a rebrand, which is crazy because Paramount Plus, I believe this is their second rebrand, because originally they were CBS All Access and then they became Paramount Plus. So now I'm curious to see what their next move is.
I think it's a good move, though, because right now there's a deal where you can get if you have Paramount Plus, you can add Showtime for like $3 a month or something like that. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if they're just going to like quietly remove the Showtime app and kind of like merge Showtime like into the Paramount Plus app. That might be something they do. I'm really curious. But yeah, if that's what they do, if they kind of like merge both of these together, that's going to be a great, quietly great deal in streaming. That's a lot of great content. You know, yeah. Showtime has a lot of great movies, a lot of new stuff when it comes out. So I hope they go that direction.
Yeah. Did you know about that deal?
I knew about that a couple of days ago.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if it was just me talking about it now. But yeah, I'm curious to see what that does moving forward with that deal. But on Paramount Plus, we have Top Gun Maverick, nominated for 6 awards, Best Picture, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Film Editing, Best Visual Effects, Best Sound, and Best Original Song. If someone told you a year ago that Top Gun Maverick is going to be nominated for Best Picture, what would your thought have been?
I never would have thought about that. We talked about this before, but we did a draft for 2022 movies early in last year, and none of us picked Top Gun Maverick because we were all convinced it was not going to do well. And then later on, right before it came out, Joe was like, you know what, I'm going to pick – how is no one picked Top Gun Maverick? Because the word of mouth had shifted so much by then that everyone was hyped for it, you know, and I'm shocked that it's gotten not just a couple of nominations, like not just like cinematography – it didn't get cinematography, actually, but again, I cannot believe it got up for Best Picture, and that's just unbelievable. Yeah, and it deserves it. It's a cool year to have like actual blockbuster action movies in the mix of Best Picture, you know?
Yep. And then over on Peacock, we got Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. That's about a widowed cleaning lady in 1950s London who madly falls in love with a couture Dior dress and decides that she must have one of her own, and that was nominated for Best Costume Design. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is no way I ever watched this movie.
I'm not surprised. When I was in New York this year, they were really hyping up this movie for some reason. Like every theater you went to, there was costumes on display everywhere for this movie, like dresses and all of the gowns and stuff. I was like, what is this movie? No one I know has even seen this movie. And then, of course, it gets Oscar nominations for costume.
All right. We also have Tar, which is coming to Peacock it's already on Peacock. It came on Peacock January 27th. And it's set in the international world of Western classical music. The film centers on Lydia Tar, widely considered one of the greatest living composer conductors and the very first female director of a major German orchestra, nominated for 6 awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Lead Actress, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography, and Best Film Editing. I know you, Tristan. I know you watched this movie. Is this movie as pretentious as it sounds?
Not nearly as pretentious as that makes it sound. No, it's not really about like the art world or the music world. It's much more focus on this specific character and like her mental journey, you know. And I don't want to spoil the ways that the plot kind of plays out, but it deals very much with cancel culture and the question of like, can we separate the art from the artist is something that I think we're talking about a lot in pop culture right now. You know, when it turns out the person who made your favorite movie is terrible, like how do you feel when you watch that movie afterwards? Can you still watch it? You know, that's like a personal choice, and I think this movie deals with where that line is for you. And they do that by kind of putting you into the mindset of Lydia Tarr, this very, very well acclaimed composer who's just, you know, she's interviewed by all these podcasts and all these people who are like loving her and praising her. And you think like she'd be someone who would watch that pretentious movie you described, you know, and then you kind of follow her as some of the darker parts of her past start to come out, and you slowly start to realize you're seeing someone, you know, in real time getting canceled, and you're trying to figure out like, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about Lydia Tarr now that you're seeing more of who she really is? And I like these questions a lot, so I think it's worth watching, especially if you're curious about that, those kind of like themes, you know, as we're dealing with stuff like J.K. Rowling and if you're a Harry Potter fan and you're also someone who like wants to support the trans community, how do you feel about like wanting to do both? You know, that's something that I think is people are really, really thinking about a lot. So yeah, I like this one a lot. Great, great performance. If she ends up winning, I'm not going to be upset. You know, her and Michelle Yeoh are kind of battling it out, essentially splitting the wins 50-50 going into the Oscars. So I think it could be her win this year. And if it is, it's deserving. I had a great time with this. And it has a good amount of fun, a good amount of drama, and a lot of like really interesting themes to talk about.
All right. And I also believe on Peacock, there was a show you watch called Poker Face, written and created basically by Rian Johnson, director of Star Wars Episode 8 and Knives Out and Glass Onion. So what are your thoughts on Poker Face?
Yeah, we just talked about Rian Johnson, and I think Poker Face is great. You know, I talked about how Peacock is kind of this platform that's there, and once in a while we talk about it, but it's not one that was on my radar. And Rian Johnson managed to put that, not just on my radar, but made me like, I'm ready to come back week to week and watch the show. He directs the first two episodes. I'm not sure if he directs anything in the rest of it, but he did the first two, and then somebody else comes in for the next few after that. So he might come in later on and do a few, but I know Natasha Lyonne herself is directing an episode later on in the season too. So yeah, this stars Natasha Lyonne, and she is kind of this this burnout working as a waitress at a casino who happens to have this really strong ability to tell when someone is lying to her, you know? And she ends up getting entangled with the casino owner, who's played by Adrian Brody, in a murder investigation involving people in the casino and people who witnessed something they shouldn't have witnessed, you know, and they get taken out. And what makes this kind of interesting is that the first scene of the show is the murder, who gets killed, who's doing the killing, how they were killed, and why, you know? So then you end up having to spend the episode watching this character figure out a lot of what you already know and like kind of twisting what you've seen in different ways. It has like a Columbo kind of structure to it in that way. And as it goes along through the rest of the series, it seems like that's going to be the structure every week. You see the murder, and then here comes Natasha Lyonne into the city to try and, you know, figure out what's going on, you know? I think it'll be a fun kind of structure like that. It's very episode by episode, you know? It's not, from what I've seen so far, it doesn't seem like there's any, like, storyline continuity. It's not like, oh, this guy's going to come up in this episode now, and you got to follow the plot. It's like, each episode is her arriving at a different mystery and kind of entangling herself into that mystery and then moving on, you know? Sort of a road trip movie where she's on the run and comes along to odd characters in one town here, and there's a murder and she has to solve it. And then she goes to another town and there's odd characters here, she's got to solve it. And you get a cool look at like the West, and it's set like on the outskirts of Vegas and the outskirts of those kind of cities out there. So you get like the vast desert landscapes and things like that. It looks incredible. Rian Johnson shoots it so well. And I'm really curious to see how the show plays out as it goes along. You know, are they going to bring in any continuity, or is it going to be all case by case? And are they going to develop this character a lot? They're going to reveal more about her past. And I really can't wait to see how much they do of this. They called it a 10-episode mystery series, something like that. So I'm wondering if they're going to be like a one and done, or if they're going to have more of it. But so far, I'm super, super impressed by it. And if you don't have Peacock, you can literally watch this for free. Like, you don't even have to have the paid membership to watch this show. So I definitely recommend watching it. It's very funny. It has that kind of Knives Out sarcasm, and while also having that kind of like blunt violence that he had in like Brick and Looper. So a great combination of what Rian Johnson does best. And I'm really, really excited for more. I'm super impressed by this, and I think you'll like it a lot, Joe.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Looks like something I'll check out. And then moving on to Showtime, which I don't know if it's really its own streaming service, but it's an add-on you can get with Amazon Prime, or like we said, Paramount Plus. And so you may have this add-on, I don't know. But you can watch Everything Everywhere All at Once. Which I watched on a plane, so I guess if you're on a Delta flight, you can watch it too. It's streaming live, free on Delta. And it's about a middle-aged Chinese immigrant who is swept up into an insane adventure in which she alone can save existence by exploring other universes and connecting with the lives she could have led. Nominated for 11 awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Lead Actress, Best Supporting Actor, 2 actresses nominated for Best Supporting Actress, Best Original Screenplay, Best Film Editing, Best Costume Design, Best Original Score, and Best Original Song. And that's Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think it's winning Best Picture based on just word of mouth and what people are saying. It seems to be the most talked about movie, but there's still a lot of time left, so that can change. Tristan, I know you watched this. What are your thoughts on Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah, this is an absolute blast. You know, I think it's definitely going to win. It's not like in my number one movie of the year, but it's definitely in my top 10, I think, you know. So I had a great time with it. And if you're turned off by the multiversal stuff, you're like, oh, I don't want to watch. I don't watch Doctor Strange. I don't watch Spider-Man. That sounds, you know, too goofy and comic booky to me. I think you'll have a good time with this. It has multiverse craziness, but I think it introduces it to you in a way that is, like, easy to understand. As zany and crazy as it gets, I think it introduces it to you in a way that's easy to digest, you know. So I think it's a great one, and I think it's especially connecting with young people. You know, I know a lot of Gen Zs are really, really loving this movie, so I'm happy to see that something like this is getting so much acclaim and attention. If it's going to bring, like, younger people into film like that, I think it's awesome. You know, if it's going to make younger people go off and watch the inspirations that this film took, you know, it draws a lot of direct references to a lot of other classic movies. So I'm hope people will watch this and go watch a bunch of other great stuff. But yeah, it's cool to see something like this not just get nominated, but I think it's going to win as well. So yeah, it's great to see something that's actually a popular pick that people are really enjoying, that's actually, you know, well done, well made, and is also going to win Best Picture. It's going to be a rare occurrence where everybody kind of agrees on a good pick here, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, like, I think last year, like, I liked Coda and it was fine, but I feel like a lot of the reason Coda won is everyone was just so sick and tired of talking about The Power of the Dog, which wasn't even that great. Like, it was fine. It was good. It was well made, but, like, no one talks about either of those movies the day the Oscars ended. And so I feel like this is one of those movies that even if it wasn't nominated for a single Oscar, people would still be talking about it and it'd still be relevant because it's, you know, a well-made, enjoyable movie. But I asked you earlier, if a year ago, what you would have thought about Top Gun Maverick being nominated for Best Picture. Let me flash back 10 years ago. You're sitting at home, you're sitting somewhere, looking at your laptop, looking at your phone, watching the Turn Down for What music video. What would you have believed if I said, hey, 10 years from now, the two guys that directed this Turn Down for What music video, they're going to direct a movie that wins Best Picture at the Oscars? What are your thoughts?
I would never have believed you, Joe. And, like, I was a fan of the Daniels. I loved the Farting Corpse movie where that they made, you know, I can't remember the name of
Swiss
it now.
Army
but
Man.
That was,
I really
Swiss Army
like
Man.
Too.
I liked that one, too. And, yeah, I'm definitely shocked to see that, like, I can't even imagine being in their shoes. You go from making a weirdo movie about a farting corpse, and then a couple of years later, you make the Best Picture winner, not, and then you're like hugely acclaimed all stars. I can't wait to see what they do next. You know, it's just really crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me ask you a question, Joe. If I asked you, you walk out of the parody classic superhero movie, you know, on all time for cinema,
oh, yeah.
I think, is superhero movie. And how do you feel if I said, Joe, the director of this, he's going to go adapt this ultra serious, gritty, post-apocalyptic video game that's going to make everybody cry. It's going to win Emmys for all these acclaimed actors, and it's going to be, you know, an all-time show. How would you feel about that?
I would say you're an idiot, but here we are. Because, I mean, he also did Chernobyl, too, so, and The Last of Us, so it's like...
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a career, you know? Superhero movie, and then Chernobyl.
Yeah, it's like the what's-his-face going on to do Green Book, which wasn't, like, amazing or anything, but it's still not the type of movie you would expect from him.
No.
All right, I believe that leaves us with one streaming service left, and that's Hulu. And I watched the How I Met Your Mother, which is kind of a continuation spinoff of How I Met Your Father. First season was 10 episodes. This season is 20 episodes. I believe this season kind of kept the train rolling. I think if you're a How I Met Your Mother fan and you're just kind of soured on the whole, it's weird to say franchise, but franchise because of how the original ended, I'd still say check this out. They're going a little bit different of a dynamic where, you know, she knows the father, but she's kind of basically, as you're watching it, you know, there's this option of like these four or five different guys that it could be. And as you're watching the show, it's kind of puzzling out, okay, which guy is going to end up being the father? Because unlike the original where you saw the kids and you heard Bob Saget, this time you see the mom and you hear the kids. So it's kind
interesting.
So it's kind of a different flashback dynamic. But Hilary Duff stars as the titular woman looking for the father. And Francia Risa, who people may know for giving Selena Gomez a kidney, as well as star, or, well, she didn't star in it, but she was in Secret Life of the American Teenager, is in it as well. I think it's solid, well made. If you like How I Met Your Mother, check it out. Even if you didn't, I don't think you needed to watch How I Met Your Mother to like How I Met Your Father, but it definitely gets added to, and there's a lot of references and cameos and appearances by characters and things from the original show.
This will definitely be one that I add to my watch list at some point. It could be a good one to watch with the girlfriend, you know, just cuddle up and and get some How I Met Your Father going on. Because I like that How I Met Your Mother a lot, so I'd be down for it. It's the same type of humor, you know, the same level of jokes. You know, is it just, would you say it just as funny as How I Met Your Father or How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah.
Definitely got to add to listen. Good. It should be a good watch.
All right.
And so I'm all for the Hillary Duff comeback, you know. I'm here for it.
Who doesn't? So it looks like we got one topic left. And that is the MVP of the week. I feel like I know where you may go, but maybe when I say a name, that'll change your opinion. And obviously, there's an actor, a character that people have talking a lot on Twitter, but I haven't watched this show, so I'm going with a pick of something I have seen, and that is Jennifer Coolidge from Shotgun Wedding, because every scene that she was in was amazing. I think, honestly, if you had cast her with someone that wasn't, it was just kind of there, didn't have any big moments, I don't think that movie works nearly as well. There's a moment, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody because I recommend everyone watch it, where, like, this is the greatest. If I was, like, apex of Jennifer Coolidge's career, I know she just won an Emmy. I don't care. There's a solid 25 seconds in this movie that I'm like, this is the best Jennifer Coolidge has ever been. And so if you want to make an argument for someone else, go ahead. But my nomination for MVP of the week is Jennifer Coolidge.
Look, I can't argue that hard against you because she was so good in this, and she was a highlight for sure. She made me, as I was watching it, like every scene she was in, I was thinking, I wish I saw this in like a packed theater because the entire theater would have lost it right there for that. You know, like she was really the fun of that movie. So I'm not that opposed to that win, Joe. And I think you may think that you know where I'm going with this because there is a pretty obvious pick, right? And I think people are going to want this to go to Nick Offerman, who was kind of the heart and soul of this episode of The Last of Us, you know, and we know Nick Offerman for the comedy stuff, so he broke that tradition to go for this really dramatic role and kind of a braver turn for the character. So I like the Nick Offerman pick, but I may actually go a different direction here, Joe. And I think my MVP of this week is actually going to be Rian Johnson, because he not only directed the first couple episodes of Poker Face, but he got me to launch the Peacock app, you know. I think that's a really big accomplishment. You know, he's not just given Netflix an Oscar nomination here for adapted screenplay, but he actually made me launch an app that I don't think I've used in many, many months, and watch a great original show, not an IP, not based off of Star Wars, not a spinoff of a Marvel show. You know, it's a totally new IP, a creative vision made by one of the more creative voices working today. So how do you feel about that nomination, Joe?
You know, I like an MVP as someone who is cross-platform. Someone who, on that, we gave it to Pedro Pascal last week because he had, like, the most watched trailer with The Mandalorian, and he had the most watched show for The Last of Us on HBO Max. So I like a good cross-platform MVP. And I think if he had either or, like, if he was just nominated for an Oscar for Netflix, I don't think he would be worth it. And I think if he just released Poker Face, I don't think he'd be worthy of it. But I think having both, getting an Oscar nomination for one platform and having a show that gets you to watch a platform that you otherwise wouldn't watch, get you to download an app that you others, that to me is MVP material. So I'm good with Rian Johnson winning MVP of the week.
Yeah, I hope you don't get a lot of hate mail for the Nick Offerman fans, because he was incredible, but you know, but he's getting a lot of praise for the handy. We got to give it out to somebody who, you know, isn't getting enough handies right now. You know, we got to give Rian Johnson.
I've heard enough about that episode that I think Nick Offerman got a lot of handies. So, so yeah, I think we can lock it in. The MVP of the week of January 31st is Rian Johnson.
I like it. And that's a nice subversion of expectations, Joe. You know, nothing.
Hey, Rian Johnson wouldn't want it any other way.
You know? It's a perfect fit.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about before we end the show here?
No, it was a good episode, a really crowded episode. A lot to talk about, though. It's a great conversation. I can't wait for next week. Should be a good one. We're coming up on some good stuff for the next couple of months. I can't believe we're going to be in February next week. We're going to talk about some of the good stuff that's coming out this month. So, yeah, see what we're going to be watching next week. I can't wait.
And I believe maybe for Valentine's Day, just an idea here, haven't talked about it with Tristan at all, maybe we do, like, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up, maybe we do, like, top five romantic movie streaming right now.
I think that sounds pretty good.
Maybe do that list. Like that. All right, yeah, so we'll do something like that. Maybe not that list specifically. Tristan, I got one final question for you. Hal Jordan, who are you casting for the Green Lanterns TV show?
Oh, God, who am I casting? Look, I think the hardest part here is that I don't necessarily think they should cast known people for most of these roles. I think they got to go for the unknown casting on a lot of these. And I think what makes it so interesting, that show, is the conflict, right? You got to have, like, the Matthew McConaughey and the Woody Harrelson duology, you know? So I think you got to have not just one actor, you got to cast them both. And you got to be able to have, like, those conflicting viewpoints, you know? So I don't know, you got any ideas, Joe? I can think of something as you're going.
Well, I was going to say, a certain person's been fan-casted as Hal Jordan for probably since the mid-90s. And they said it's True Detective in Space, so I say, all right, let's cast Matthew McConaughey as Hal Jordan. Now he's getting a little old. If I had to say a more, but then again, it is going to be a more lived-in universe, so if I had to give a more realistic prediction, I'm going to say someone who's only been fan-casted as Hal Jordan for the last 4 or 5 years, and that's Glenn Powell. People may know as Hangman from Top Gun Maverick.
That's a pretty good one. I was looking at, like, a Zac Efron. You know, he's kind of ready for a comeback. I can see that being, like, a fun casting.
Yeah,
you know.
I can see that.
I think that would be a fun one.
All right, that kind of wraps up our show for the day. Without further ado, goodbye.